For Parsha Shmos, we're going to take a look at the beginning of the Sefer itself, here on the Blue Chumash, it's on page 127. The Ve'ela Shmos B'nei Yisrael Haboyim Mitzrayim. Chazal point out in the Medrash that this is very strange. Haboyim is in Lashon Hove, in the present tense. Ba'im Achshav, when in truth they had come 2 centuries earlier, because the events that are about to unfold of Vayokam El Chadosh, this is at the end of the period of Golos. And yet it says Haboyim Mitzrayim, as if they are coming now to Mitzrayim. What do we do with that? Also, we want to understand why the Torah puts the emphasis here on Shmos B'nei Yisrael. What is the significance of the Shmos, such an emphasis here? And especially, the Torah could have said, V'ele B'nei Yisrael, Ruvain V'Shimon. It could have skipped the entire section here and gone straight to Ruvain V'Shimon and mentioned them by name. So these are the questions we want to ask. The psukim at the beginning of Sefer Shmos seem to be superfluous. We already have learned in Sefer Bereishis, especially in Parshas Vayigash, that Bnei Yisrael, and there the list of names appears, comes down to Mitzrayim, Bnei Yisrael together with Yaakov. Here it's Haboyim Mitzrayim, which is describing events that took place so long ago. Why does the Torah use the present tense? Why the emphasis on Shmos Bnei Yisrael? Why couldn't the Torah just say V'elu Bnei Yisrael, Ruvain, V'Shimon, and just skip this whole business about Shmos, Bnei Yisrael, Haboyim, Mitzrayim? There seems to be a lot of superfluous words here, and we want to understand what this is all about. So again, as far as Shalom Aleichem, you can take a copy of the text if you like. As far as why the Torah uses the present tense to describe events that have taken place so much earlier, we're going to talk about the famous Medrash that asks the question, "Be'ezes chus, in what merit in Bnei Yisrael were they worthy of leaving, of being redeemed from Mitzrayim?" And the Medrash gives three answers. Number one, Shaloshinu Eshmav, they didn't change their names. Number two, Shaloshinu Es Lishonam, they didn't change their language. And number three, Shaloshinu Es Malbusham, they didn't change their levush. And the purpose of our limud today is to study this medrash in depth, and specifically to try to figure out why is there such emphasis here on these three dimensions. On number one, Lishonam, number two, Malbusham, and number three, Shmam, their names. Their names, their clothing, the way they dressed, and of course, the language that they spoke. Now, the premise of this entire discussion is that when a nation is sent into diaspora, it is exiled from its land, and finds itself amongst other people and other nations, there's a tremendous danger of losing its own identity, of getting mixed up, you know, in marrying within the, if they're there on a long-term basis. In fact, all of history is full of this phenomenon that repeats itself over and over again, namely that peoples were exiled from their land, they find themselves in other countries, in other lands, and their own culture, their own individual nationality is completely lost. That's called nitmu bagoyim. Nitmu means they get lost, they get mixed up in that nation in which they find themselves. They're spread out throughout the world. And yet, what we find that's unique about the Jewish people is that despite the fact that Jewish history is one continuous chain and story of galuyot, of the Jews being exiled from one land to another, of the Jews ending up in one diaspora to another diaspora, and yet here we are today. We're still alive. Why is it that all the other nations lost their nationhood, their individuality, their independence? They became nitmu bagoyim, ba'amim, and yet our nation is still very much alive. If you take, for example, the case of Golos Mitzrayim, where the Jews spent over 2 centuries in the exile of Mitzrayim, not only were they away from their land, they had no expression of their nationality, of their nationhood. They were completely subjugated. They had to comply with the laws of the land. And eventually, it didn't take long until they were subjugated and placed into a pressure of worshipping the idols of the land, of being impacted by the culture of Mitzrayim. And eventually, Chazal say, according to the Zohar, they reached what's called the Memtes Shari Tuma, the lowest level of contamination with the Goyim, with the Avodah Zohar. And perhaps of all the different diasporas, of all the different galiot that the Jewish people endured, Mitzrayim, more than anything, had an impact on the people of Israel. And yet, despite the fact that the Jews at the time Mitzrayim reached the lowest level that you could possibly imagine, the shiflus of Memtes Shari Tumo, nevertheless, there were three things that kept them and sustained them, maintained them as a separate national entity. And that's Balbusham, Lashonam, and Shmam. And why? Why is this all important? How do these three dimensions secure and guarantee the existence, the survival of the Jewish people, despite all the galiot, all the different diasporas that they entered into, and especially in the case of Mitzrayim? So we begin to appreciate why Shmos begins with the words Ele Shmos B'nei Yisrael Haboyim Mitzrayim. Haboyim Mitzrayim means that the Torah is already asking the question, Haboyim Mitzrayim, how could there still be a nation, Boim Mitzrayim, that are now coming into Mitzrayim? How could they maintain, how did they successfully maintain their own identity despite decades and centuries of oppression and subjugation in the Golus of Mitzrayim? And the emphasis here is, number one, on the word Shmos. As a result of their names, they were able to be Boim Mitzrayim. They're even now considered as if they came to Mitzrayim, as if they were never really mixed amongst the Goyim, amongst the Mitzrayim. They were never Nitma'u b'Mitzrayim. They always retained their independence as a separate nation because they didn't change their names, they didn't change their levush, their clothing, and they didn't change their language. These are the three dimensions that are the sod, if you will, the secret of Yisraeliut, of being a separate, independent nation. This is a Chumash class. If you
are there, Maramakumos today?
Yeah, I gave them over to Alan. If Alan could take care of that and pass them on, okay, if you don't mind. Fine. And he says the following: that why the Jewish nation is separate people. Let's focus, even on a superficial level, without even delving below the surface, on the concept of levush, on the concept of apparel and the way people dress and present themselves. And he says the following, that although levush is only superficial, you could, for example, have a very poor person who happens to own some very expensive apparel, and if you judge him by the way he dresses, you might think, wow, he must be a wealthy guy. It doesn't prove anything. It's all superficial. And the opposite end of the opposite extreme, you can have a person who's very wealthy, but he's dressed, you know, we call it dressing down. You know, he's wearing regular shabby clothes.
Casual Tuesday.
Mm. Casual Tuesday. So yet, he's a very rich guy. You can't judge a person by the way he dresses. Correct? And here, if you take a look on the top of page 24, you'll see that you can really apply the same objection, the same logic to language, because a person really just uses language as a matter of communication. And without communication, he would use his hands for sign language, but communication is much more sophisticated, much more precise. So what's the significance of a language? Well, for example, a name. You might argue the name doesn't really tell me anything about the person. You know, if his name is Jimmy or Ryan or whatever his name is, what does that tell you about the essence of a person? It's only chitzonius. It's only superficial and extraneous and external. But now we get to B'nai Yisrael. And when we get to B'nai Yisrael, and we find that they reach the Memtes Shari Tumah, even the mitzvah of Mila was only being observed by a select few, how is it possible that these three dimensions, which seem so superficial and so external, should in some sense guarantee that boy of Mitzrayim, it's as if they came now to Mitzrayim, that they could preserve their own independent identity. So he starts by presenting the story of Amalek. If you look in Bamidbar, Perek Chaf Aleph, Pasuk Beis, it says there, Im Nason Titein Es Ha'am Azeh, this is the tefillah of Klal Yisrael, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to save them, spare them from Amalek. And it says there, Ha'am Hazeh, this nation. And then Rashi says, and this is the language of Rashi, Yoshev HaNegev Zeh Amalek, Shenemar Yoshev Bi'eretz HaNegev. And what did Amalek do? What was their ploy at this point? Shinua Es Lishono. They decided that they're going to hide their identity, conceal the fact that they're Amalekim, because after all, they did have some sort of deeper subconscious, at least, belief in the tefillah, the power of prayer of Klal Yisrael. And Klal Yisrael had spoken about Ha'am Hazeh in that prayer, this nation, meaning Amalek, and give Amalek over to, you know, to surrender, Vechlamtem Esareim, and will destroy all their cities. So Amalek didn't want to appear as Amalek because they were afraid of the power of prayer. So what did they do? According to this Medrash, which Rashi quotes in Bamidbar Chaf Aleph, they changed their language. They no longer spoke Amaleki language. They started speaking the local Canaanite language. And therefore the tefillah of Klal Yisrael now would be directed towards the Canaanim and not towards the Amalekim. And they aren't Canaanim because they're Amalekim. Then Klal Yisrael observed the fact that they were dressed like Amalekim. They had changed the language and they spoke the tongue of the Canaanim, but they were dressed like Amalekim. Ulashonam Lashon Canaan, yet they spoke the language of Canaan. Amru. Klal Yisrael said, you know what, this is very confusing. We don't know what we should say in that phrase. Nispal Stam, let's use a generic phrase. Im Nason Titein Es Ha'am Hazeh. Ha'am Hazeh, we're not going to specify their name. Which nation is it that's really threatening our existence? In other words, Amalek understood that Klal Yisrael had this powerful tefillah which would bring them success. God would listen and hearken to their prayers, and they, Amalek, would not be able to successfully defeat the Jewish people. So what they did is they dressed up like Canaanim, and now Klal Yisrael were completely confused. They didn't know who were the Canaanim, who were the Amalekim. They couldn't tell the difference. So what did they do? Klal Yisrael saw that they were speaking the language of Amalek. They were speaking the language of Amalek, but they were dressed like Canaanim. So they said, "Es Ha'am Hazeh." So the Kasha here from Rabbeinu Bunam, one of the great shining lights of Hasidus, is why didn't Amalek do one up it, do a little bit better? Why didn't they also speak the language of Canaan, change their garments to the garments of Canaan? That would have been a perfect show that would conceal their true identity. Klal Yisrael then would have thought of them as Canaanim. They would have been mispalel for the Canaanim. Hashem, spare us and destroy the Canaanim. And then there would be no tefillah that would be accepted on high against the Amalekim. Says Rabbeinu Bunam, if the Amalekim would have not only changed their levush but also their language, then they would completely have lost their identity as Amalek. And they would have been Canaanim. And Ein Shum Yichud B'Canaanim El Esfasim Levusham. What makes the Canaanim a unique nation? It's the way they dress and the way they speak. They had to leave something for themselves, for their old identity, because after all they were Amalekim, and that's what they wanted to be. They didn't want to become Canaanim. So what they did was, they spoke the language of the Amalekim. So even though they dressed like the Canaanim, but since they maintained their identity through the language, that was fine. Because again, the yesod is, if they change both their language and the way they dress, they lose their identity, and they become Knanim, and they cease to be Amalekim. The Mishnah in Masechta Edios tells us the name of Hillel, that Malei Hein Mayim She'uvim, Poslim Es HaMikvah El Sha'odom Chayav Lomar B'Loshon Rabba. In other words, Rashi says that Hillel employs the word hein, hey yud nun, which in the old language was a part of the vernacular of the spoken language, and it referred to a certain volume of water in this case. The Tan of the Mishnah tells us chayav Adam Chayev Lomar B'Loshan Rabba. Why am I using the word Hain? And the answer is because that's what I heard from my Rebbe. And that's what he heard from his Rebbe. That's the way Rashi learns this particular Mishnah here of Hillel. But if you look in the Gaon says that the Gemara tells us a person should not be a Shliach Tzibur unless he knows how to pronounce all the letters of Hebrew perfectly, meticulously. He should know the difference between, for example, a hey and an alf. Today we don't know. It's a lost art. The Shliach Tzibur has to be medagdik bilshono. Hillel Zaken says about himself that it was very problematic, it was very challenging for him to pronunciate and enunciate the difference between the hey and the alf. He wasn't able to live up to that demand. So therefore, what does he do? He uses the word hein, hey yud nun. Hein mayim shovim poslim es hamikvah. And Hillel was afraid that it would sound like ein mayim shuvim poslim, because the hey and the aleph sound very similar. Therefore, he added the word malo. And his language was malo hein mayim. And malo means that we're talking about a full volume of hein mayim. And when Rabbeinu HaKadosh, when Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi edited the Mishnah, so then what did he do? Shona es hamila malo, he also wrote the word malo, right? Malo hein, which was unnecessary, but he only did it because that's where he heard it from his Rebbe. So Rebbe, even though he knew how to pronounce the word hein properly, he didn't need to change it to malohein and add that extra adjective. But nevertheless, because he could, no one would suspect that he was saying ein when he said hein. But nevertheless, he wanted to observe and be absolutely loyal to the language of his Rebbe, and therefore he added the word malohein. So the Zohar says that Rabbeinu HaKadosh had a certain gilui min hashamayim. There was a revelation from the divine spheres to teach him, to tell him that he's allowed to utilize and take license of Eis Lasos Lashem Eferis Arsecha and commit the oral law to writing. However, he tried as much as he could to keep it to its barest minimum, to abridge it, because he realized that this was a violation of the Isur of Dvarim Shebal Pei Yatar Shai Lomar Miksav. And therefore, when he wrote the Mishnah, he was very careful not to add any single word or even any single letter that was unnecessary. And yet, in this particular case, the Mishnah in Edios that was studying, Rebbe felt it necessary and it was worthwhile to add the words Malo Hein. And why is that? The answer is because that's the way he heard it from his Rebbe. And we are obligated, committed to the Doros, to the generations, to pass on, transmit the Torah exactly the way we heard it, to be as close to the original as we possibly can. In any event, this clearly indicates how significant language is, that we should even have a tradition of choosing and expressing ourselves with words that were used by our Rebbeim who came before us. So we saw already in the story about Amalek that they would not change both their language and their clothing, their levush. And we can appreciate the significance of language because, as we saw here, Rebbe was very meticulous, very careful that the language should be identical to that which the Rebbe transmitted to him. So we have now the significance of both dress and language. Now we get to names. With regard to names, we think, and that's what the world thinks, there's no intricate, intrinsic relation between the name and the personality and the essence of a person is nefesh, his soul. However, that's not true with regard to a Torah Jew. A Torah Jew is very meticulous about choosing a name, a father, a mother for a child, and it could be that they get Ruach HaKodesh in order to come up with the right name. Why? Because the name is indicative of the very essence of the person who carries that name. In fact, even with regard to the animal kingdom, how did each species get its name? Adam Arisha, correct. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Bereishis, at the beginning of Sefer Bereishis, tells Adam Arisha to give names to all the animals, the Chayis, the Behemoth, the Ophos, and they pass by him and he gives a name to each species. And there was a tremendous amount of in-depth intellectual revelation over here because we understand that the name of the animal is indicative of something that's essential to the animal. In the case of a child, we give the boy, if it's a boy, at the bris, if it's a girl, after Kriyas HaTorah, or during Kriyas HaTorah. And one would ask the question, what's the connection between giving a name and the bris milah? The bris milah is a mitzvah unto itself. But the answer is that since we have such COVID rush, we take this so seriously, we work so hard before we give a name. We don't just throw out a name because, oh, it sounds nice, why not? The answer is because at the end of a bris milah, we say the following, and then we say, V'ikari Shmo B'Yisrael. In other words, this is the great prayer of the entire community on behalf of the child, that the child should live a long life, and we say, Kayim Esayel Rezelov Vifli'imo. At that point, when we're talking about the kium of the yelid, we're talking about his very being, and that's the point where we give the name, because the name is a reflection of the very being, the very essence of the character, the nature of this neshama, of this nefesh. So again, we're going to combine the bakasha, the request HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be mekayim the yelid, love v'limo, together with the kriyas Hashem. And here we want to look at a Teshuvas HaRashba. The Rashba wants to know that there are two languages in Sefer Bereishis to describe the father giving the name. You remember early in Sefer Bereishis, the Torah describes and codifies all the giving of the names. But there are two different languages. If we take, for example, the case of Shais, so there it says, Hu Yolad Ben Vayikra Shmo Enosh. So there's a whole long presentation here of Vayikra Shmo so-and-so. But otherwise, in other places, the Torah just says Vayikra Shmo. I'm sorry, the Torah just says the name without saying Vayikra Shmo. We don't even find Vayikra Shmo. For example, Vayechi Enosh Tishim Shana Vayoled Es Kenan. It doesn't say Ukara Eshmo Kenan as it does in the case of
Enosh.
So the one who tries to explain this is the Rashba. The Rashba is Tshuva, and this you'll see on the top of page 26, says that when it says Vayikra Eshmo, then the name is not just a simon, it's not just a way of identifying a person, it's not just external, but rather it reflects the inner essence. Most of the generations before the Mabul were lost to we have nothing left from them. They're swept away by the tides of time. They don't have any significance, they didn't have any impact or make any contribution on the world itself. And therefore, we could identify them by their names, but their names are nothing more than They're name tags, you know, they're just identifications. There's a siman chitzoni, he calls it a tavit. Tavit is, you know, when you wear a badge or a name tag in order to differentiate between one person and the other. But the name doesn't say anything about the contribution and the essence of that person. It's not, it's superficial, it's not deep, it's not below the surface. And that, according to the Rashba, is the difference between when the Torah says Vayikra Eshmo, because Enosh, for example, is going to play a major role in history, as opposed to something like Vayolad es Kenan. You know, who's Kenan? Who ever heard of the guy? He didn't make any great contribution to this world. But in any event, what we see clearly from the Rashba is the deeper meaning and the significance of a name. When you call someone a name and you give him that name is very significant. It indicates his future contribution to the universe. And therefore, any member of the Jewish community has a purpose, has a goal, an objective, a contribution. He was brought down to this earth for that particular carving, you know, that contribution. And the name that he received at birth from his parents has a tremendous significance above and beyond just being a name tag. We're going to see that the halacha puts so much emphasis on names that if a person is ill, and even if he's on, you know, in danger, his life is endangered, we add to his name. Again, because when we mispalo with the name adds to the koach, to the power of the tefillah. And even when a parent has a child and he's thinking about which name to give it, he tries to get guidance from Talmidei Chachamim or others who are experienced in the, you know, understanding the inner spiritual dimensions of Torah. But let's go back now to the three things. So we start with Shaloshinu Es Shmam. It means that Bnei Yisrael were able to maintain their unique characteristic and personality as a nation, not just on the outside, not just superficially, but rather on the inside. And at this point, we're going to talk about the Haskalah movement. You remember that there was a Haskalah movement, what, about 250 years ago probably, something like that. And people wanted to change their Jewish name so they could get mixed up with the Goyim. Mm-hmm. There was so much of that assimilation at that time. Now, Shmama Yehudi Hefriya Vehik Heik Aleim, why were the workers so opposed to this particular individual wearing his yarmulke? And the answer is because with why are they very makbid on the names, I meant to say, not just the levush, the yarmulke. We'll see that the levush, the yarmulke, the Chassam Sofer has a tshuva that, you know, it's very important to wear yarmulke. He says the following: that during the Haskalah movement, the first thing they wanted to do in order to assimilate was to change their names. They felt that the Jewish names bothered them in their social connection with the Goyim. And to this day, there are dimensions of, or I should say, denominations of Jewish sects, like the Reform movement, that they try to do away with Jewish names. So they want to use non-Jewish names, like James and Miles and all these names that you've heard. But we see that halachically, there is an afkamina between Lashon Kodesh and other Lashonos. For example, what's the significance of Lashon Kodesh above and beyond just the essence of a name? Halachically, it's significant in terms of Kriyat Shema. In Kriyat Shema, you can read Kriyat Shema in any language, with any translation. But if he doesn't understand what he's saying, he does not fulfill his obligation. Lo yatsa yidei chovasa. Now, in Kriyas HaMegillah, it's very interesting. The Gemara establishes that a Lazi, who speaks another language and doesn't understand Lashon Kodesh, he can fulfill his mitzvah of listening to the Megillah in one of two ways. Either by hearing the Megillah read in his language, or alternatively by hearing it in Lashon Kodesh, even though he doesn't understand it. Because that's the significance of Lashon Kodesh. It has inherent meaning to it. And therefore, even if the Gavra, even if the person who's speaking Hebrew is not understanding it, it still has the significance of a spoken language. And therefore, you can be yotze kriyat shma or kriyat samigila in lashon kodesh, even if a person is classified as someone who doesn't understand the lashon kodesh. The status of lashon kodesh is on a different scale. It's sguli. It has some sort of power within it. The Maral Mipak, for example, wrote many works, and almost, you know, one can almost say that the common thread throughout the word, all his works, is the significance of a word in Lashon Kodesh, and how we can analyze that word and take it apart in so many different ways and see it in so many different perspectives. Now, Lashon Kodesh is what separates us from the Goyim, because it's a separate language that's not identical to the other languages. It's unique in the spectrum of languages. Now, when it comes to Levush Yehudi, what is considered a genuinely Jewish way of dressing? And the answer is that it's a dress pattern that hasn't been influenced. We're not imitating the Goyim. And it becomes a uniquely Jewish apparel. Here he says something in the name of the Belzer Rebbe. It says that he had a question: why is it that when the Jewish women in Mitzrayim borrowed clay kesef, clay zav, smolos, why did the Torah have to tell us that, you know what they did with the begadim? It says, v'samtem al b'neichem u'b'noseichem. Those, that which you take out of Mitzrayim should be placed on, how would you say, decked onto the bodies of your children, and your male children, your female children. But the answer is that if you'll ask why the Torah had to emphasize that the children were wearing these begadim, is the answer is because the levush of Mitzrayim was not tzanua, it was not modest, and therefore, hit'imu abgadim aktsorim layelodim aktanim shalem hayukvar abgadim at'ivim. What they did was they used the adult clothing to clothe the children. And for the children, it was the right size as far as theus is concerned. And now, on the top of page 27, we begin to answer the questions that we asked at the beginning of this essay, namely, V'elish mos b'nei Yisrael ha'boy mitzrayma. Why the emphasis on the word Shmos? The answer is they maintained and retained their original names. They didn't change their names. And these names would stand, would be omed li'am Yisrael for the sake of the Jewish people throughout the generations, and make them into boyim, as if now we could describe them as boyim Mitzrayim. They were able to overcome and buttress themselves against the penetrating influence of the Mitzrim, so that it's now Haboyim, as if they were new. Now they came down to Mitzrayim without all the baggage of Egyptian culture. And all this is because Lo Shinu Eshma, that somehow, maybe we could say metaphysically, the name itself, insofar as it expresses the essence of the neshama, that protects the Jewish people, and they didn't mix up with the goyim. As we saw before, you know, some of the early reform, that first thing they wanted to do is change their name so they could get, you know, they could get assimilated into the goyim. So therefore, the name of this book, the second of the five books of Moses, is called Sefer Shmos. And that's an appropriate name, because this book is going to reflect or present the end of the Golus of Mitzrayim, the Geula of Klal Yisrael. They become a free nation, and therefore it's got to be called Shmos, because the only reason that they were able to be zocheh in this Geula is because they maintained the character, the nature, the personality of a Jew, which expresses itself in the language, in the way they dress, and most importantly in the names that they didn't change. And therefore, when the Torah says at the beginning of Shmos that these are their names, which seems at the face of it to be just a superfluous repetition of the names that are already presented in Bereishis, in Vayigash, no. The Torah wants to tell you now that these are the names that reflect the essence of each one of the of the members of Klal Yisrael that are Yorodei Mitzrayim, and that's what kept them to Boi Mitzrayim. That's what guaranteed that they can now be brand new in Mitzrayim. And the Torah can be understood on so many different levels: Pshat, Remez, Drush, and Sod. And the Sod, which are the secrets and the mystical interpretations of the Torah, they have a certain logic to them. They're not illogical. But again, in order to really be able to play the game of Sod, you know, and move around letters and names and words and get, you know, mathematical calculations, you have to be a Baki, you have to be an expert in that. And one of those experts, if not the expert of all time, of all Jewish history, was the Arizal. And he says that there's something called Sofei Tevos, meaning not only can we darshan from the beginning letter of each word, which is called Notrikun, even the last letter of each word is significant. And he points this out on our pasuk, V'ele Shmos Bnei Yisrael Habayim Mitzrayma. And what are the Sofei Tevos here? We have V'ele Shmos, that's Hey and Tov. We have Bnei Yisrael is a Yud. Right, Bnei is a Yud, and Yisrael is a Lamed, Haboyim is a Mem. And he says that the word that you produce over here is Haboyim. Now take a look at the...
It's that Tehillim.
It's Tehillim, correct. And where do we get Tehillim? The Tuf of Shmos is the Tuf, is Tuf of Tehillim, and then you have the Hay, and then you have the Lamed of Yisrael, and then you have the Yud of Bnei, until finally you have the Mem of Haboyim. Now it's very interesting, the Pasuk says Haboyim Mitzrayim, but in the Notrikun of the Sofei Tevos here, of the Arizal, we stop after the word Haboyim. That Mem is the Mem that corresponds to the Mem of Tehillim. And at that point, he's cutting us off from the next word in the Pasuk, which is Mitzrayim. And that would really strengthen what we said before, that the V'ele Shmos is because of Haboyim, meaning they maintained and preserved their identity through their names, and therefore their Boyim, it's as if now they came down for the first time, they're no longer Mitzrayim, they're not influenced by Mitzrayim. And that's the significance of the Pasuk, which the Medrash talks about. In Tehillim it says, Yihu l'ratzon imrei fi, David HaMelech, who's called the Ne'im Zmiros Yisrael, he requests from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that someone who reads Psukim from Tehillim, it should be considered as if he studied Negayim and Olos. Negayim and Olos are two of the most difficult disciplines in Shas. We've studied it a little bit in our Rogachev study. And what it means is that David HaMelech was praying to Hashem that just as Negayim and Olos, which requires a tremendous amount of work, it's so complicated, and that gives it a special chashivus and chavivus, so too somebody who is involved in Tehillim, even though, again, Tehillim is much easier than Negayim and Olos, Hashem should consider it as if he gets the schar for Yegiya Rabba, for working very hard and studying the Goyim Violos. This was the prayer of David HaMelech. And therefore the word Tehillim here, which is hinted or alluded to at the very beginning of this parasha, is indicative of something deeper, that Tehillim should be appreciated and given the significance of something much more profound and challenging like the Goyim and Olos. And here too, don't just read the Pasuk, Elish Mos B'nei Yisrael Haboyim, and that's it. You know, it's more than that. Like Tehillim, it has a deeper meaning to it. And it means Haboyim because Lo Shinu Eshmam, etc. And here he quotes the Sifra in Parshas Tazria, that if you have a Kohen who's a total Amoritz, he doesn't know beans about Negoyim, he doesn't even know enough to pronounce the Baal HaNega as Tomei. So what we do is we bring a Talmud Chacham, who's not necessarily a Kohen, and he takes a look at the Nega, and he'll whisper into this ignoramus, into the ears of this Kohen, who's an ignoramus, that he should declare a Tameh, or he should declare a Tor. And the Kohen repeats what the Talmud Chacham says, and even if the Kohen doesn't have any understanding of Lashon Kodesh, he could just repeat like a tuki. How do you say a tuki? A parrot. You know, the words of the Talmud Chacham, and it says Tameh, and the Mitzorah becomes Tameh. And this is a reflection, a concrete reflection of the significance of Lashon Kodesh, that Lashon Kodesh can engender, create tumah or tahara, even if the person who expresses those words in Lashon Kodesh doesn't understand them. It's very similar to what we discussed earlier about Kriyat Shema, the Kibiyotze Kriyat Shema in Lashon Kodesh, even if you don't understand the words. The Hebrew itself, once it's enunciated, is Poel Es Pulaso. It has the impact, and it does what it has to do. And therefore, David HaMelech, when he said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yiyu L'Ratzon Imrei Fi, and he said, let a Korei B'Sefer Tehillim be like a Kohen who learns Negayim, what he meant to say is just like a Kohen, even if he doesn't understand Negayim. But he says the words, that itself impacts on the Metzora that becomes Tameh. So too, when we say in Tehillim, and words that we might not even understand. You know, the Tehillim Zogers might not understand the Tehillim that they're reading. Tehillim is pretty complicated. Yifalu b'shamayim. It will have the impact up in the heavens. This Amiris Tehillim will have such an impact, even though the person who's reciting the Tehillim has no understanding of the meaning of the words. So therefore, what we understand is that if we take the nutrikin of the Arizal on the Pasuk V'Elish Mos B'nei Yisrael HaBoim, and we mention that the Shem, the name of a Jew, the Lashon, the language that he speaks, and the Levush, as we saw earlier, these are the fundamental building blocks for the Geul of Klal Yisrael. And even if we don't understand all of this on the deeper level, but it's like Tehillim, which has a tremendous impact, and is elevated to the status of Esek B'negoyim Uba'olo simply because HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave it that significance. And that's the significance of Lashon Kodesh. I can recite Tehillim, and that itself is the Lashon that has such an impact. And things that you and I might have gauged or judged as being superficial, and they're not essential, they're only on the outside, they're external, no. They have a tremendous power to accomplish repercussions and impacts, even in Shamayim, and they protect Klal Yisrael. So these are the dimensions that have a tremendous power. It's the Safa that they didn't change their language. We have to be careful about Lashon Kodesh and use it. Number two, they didn't change their clothing. And finally, not only Shmam Umalbusham, but they also maintained a very great, shall I say, loyalty to Lashonam, Malbusham, and Shmam, to the language that they spoke, the names that they had, and the way they dressed. And in that way, they became Haboyim Mitzrayim. They were able to maintain their significance, their self-independence as a nation, even in the Golos. And when we see people that change their language because they think the Hebrew language shouldn't be used, they want to use other languages, they change their names because they're afraid that Jewish names might impact in a negative way on their non-Jewish culture. If they decide to wear wild clothing, the way the models and all this chazarai that, you know, from the styles of today, and reject a tzanua way that a Jew should look in a very humble and modest way, then we're on the verge of chas v'shalom assimilation, and that's what we're facing today in many cases. So whatever we can do to strengthen Klal Yisrael in these three dimensions, that's a tremendous thing. And that will maintain our unique nationhood as an independent nation. Ad bias goel b'meirav yameinu. Amen.